Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
So it happened as you were expecting, right? As the news was, you heard Jeff Passan talking about it. Buster Olney was telling us about it as well. Good morning, New York City on the pier. Keyshawn, J. Will, Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll get Buster in here in a moment. But as we knew it would happen starting yesterday in Major League Baseball, as umpires were going to start checking pitchers. And coincidentally, it's the best pitcher in the game that was checked yesterday right out of the gate, Jacob deGrom, who did make his start after, remember, he left his previous start with an injury or at least some soreness in the shoulder, but no issues there. So back at it, and of course still back at just dominating the way he was dominating. But after his first inning, he walks off and the umpire comes up to him. Let me check your hat. Let me check your glove, your belt. It was kind of a funny situation. He laughed about it. Handled, I think, in the best way you could possibly handle it, right? Just all you can do is kind of laugh. Obviously, nothing was found. He still went back to dominating, and the Mets got the win in the first of the doubleheader. Afterwards, DeGrom talking about whether or not he was surprised that he got checked. Oh, we don't have that just yet? Okay, we'll get that in a minute. But still, his pitching, his performance, he's the one guy that if anybody's using the sticky stuff, as they've been talking about, you know, you'd think the way he's been dominating, is it him? Would he be someone? Other pitchers that have been named, including obviously the Yankees ace, that they feel like it affects spin rate. Spin rate's been the biggest thing with the sticky stuff, right? Whether it's spider tech or whatever else that they're using. That's been the major issue in the sport. But DeGrom, clearly not using any of it. He's gone, guys, 30 straight innings with 30 straight shutout innings. He's 2 2/3 innings away from the franchise record.
Ridiculous.
But still, like, he's not a guy that definitely you would suspect. And we do have the sound now. This is him just talking about being surprised about being checked.
You know, they said going into it they were going to check, and you know, I expected it. You know, it is what it is, and they wanted to go ahead and check, and that was fine.
And then his interaction with the umpires while he was being inspected.
Yeah, I don't know what the impact's going to be, but I said, you know, what all do you guys need? You know, glove, hat, and belt, they said. So I handed them that stuff and then went along my way.
I mean, you would think at this point, if any pitcher is caught, I mean, you're a damn fool. Like, you've been warned.
But it's like everything else, though, right, man. Buster? I mean, when you think about it.
Right, Buster only joining us right now on the Goodyear Hotline.
People in life, you say, well, you got to be a damn fool to think you're going to get away with that. This dude next to you got caught. Yep. But it doesn't matter. They still go out there and do it.
Yeah, I've got my theories on that. And let's get to that in a little bit. But just to talk about last night. And what happened, it was probably for Major League Baseball in some respect, a dream scenario that the coincidence was the first pitcher to be checked was the best pitcher on the planet. Yeah. Because then the message could come down, you know what, we're checking everybody. It's going to be the random DUI checks. We're going to check each starting pitcher twice. We're going to check every relief pitcher. We're checking everybody the rest of the year, and we want it to be unobtrusive. And that a lot of the voices coming out of the games last night were about that. Bob Melvin, the Oakland manager, saying it surprised him how it really was sort of seamless because they do it as the pitchers are coming off during the commercial break. It's real quick. They look at the stuff, and then they let them go along their way. Now, Key, I will tell you, I agree with what you're implying right there that – yes, somebody could say, you know what? I'm the relief pitcher who's 31 years old. I bounced around the minor leagues a while. Oh, my God, I can't throw my curveball without the foreign substance. Maybe I can try to think of a way to put it inside in some place where the umpires aren't going to check. Maybe that risk reward for me is a little different than one of these elite pitchers. Because as Charles Barkley said last week, what, you get suspended for this 10 days with pay? As he texted me, that's a vacation.
No, it really truly is with a vacation pay. With pay on top of that. How appropriate, though? I mean, they checked Jacob deGrom. Clearly, he's been dealing on everybody all year long and then some. But how appropriate was it just to check him first?
I think it just absolutely was this crazy coincidence that the Mets happened to be playing this makeup game and have this doubleheader. And on this Monday that they started to do these checks on June 21st, the Mets played the first game And even after all these physical issues, guess who was on the mound? Mm-hmm. It was Jacob deGrom. And I think it's absolutely appropriate if you are baseball and you're trying to let everybody know, look, we think this is a major problem and we're going to address this. We're going to do these checks. And look, over the last week, most of the voices we've heard are from pitchers, Tyler Glasnow, Gerrit Cole. There's a silent group of players, mostly silent group of players on the other side, the position players who are saying, finally, we need this. We need to have a level playing field because the pitcher domination had gotten completely out of hand.
Buster, five more shutout innings for DeGrom. I mean, how do you even begin to describe what we're all witnessing here?
Jay, it's fun. Like, what the Jacob deGrom we're seeing right now is the best pitcher that we've ever seen. That start last night was the embodiment of his surgical precision in how he pitches because he dominates that corner low and away to right-handed hitters and low and in to left-handed hitters like nobody that we've seen since Mariano Rivera. And Rivera was a relief pitcher who did it one inning at a time. He threw 70 pitches last night, 60 were in that spot, low and away, and the Braves were completely helpless. Some numbers for you. He's faced 250 hitters this year. He struck out 117 of those, 47%. And think about these numbers. Against the 1, 2, and 3 batters in the on opposing teams, that's the first, second, and third hitters in opposing lineups, those guys are 6-89 with 45 strikeouts. They've scored one run. We're in the middle of June. One run for the first three hitters in opposing lineups.
And you know what? We're showing it right now, right? Like on the screen on ESPN News, right? So you see the ERA at 0.50 right now. The strikeouts at 117. But the strikeouts per nine, 14.6. Let's compare it to the league average, right? So his 0.50, the league average of ERA is 4.12. The whip, right, is 0.51. The league average is 1.28. And then the strikeouts per nine, 14.6. The league average is 9.2. Like, that's the kind of dominance we're talking about. And again, this is without using sticky stuff and all that other, you know, all the other secrets and tricks of the trade that they're trying to take out of the sport. With that in mind, you know, again, when you just think about the difference, like what we're seeing here, we don't see a difference in his performance. But since you came out with the report a couple of weeks ago, since obviously the league put out the memo, are we seeing, though, a change in spin rate?
Yes. The spin rate is down. The batting averages are up. The other day, I got a text message from a coach who said, "Have you seen so-and-so?" And he was referring to a high-profile reliever in the American League East who suddenly has gone from being Superman to Clark Kent. And this particular reliever is all of a sudden struggling to throw high fastballs, command high fastballs, because that's the sense you get from staffers. The two pitches that are most affected are high fastballs, four-seam fastballs that pitchers have been beating hitters with, top of the zone. If you can command that, you're going to beat a lot of these hitters who are using launch angle or curveballs. And it does seem like there are a lot of pitchers, a lot of relievers in particular, who are being dramatically affected by this in terms of being able to command the ball. Now, maybe they'll find some way to adjust for that, but I do think we're going to see a rise in the performance of offensive players moving forward because they're not seeing the 98-mile-an-hour wiffle balls like they did earlier in the year.
Buster, I've been hanging around Alan Hahn last couple months or whatnot, so the germ spreading is starting to carry over to me to try to create gossip as I'm learning this business with Alan. And I want to know, and you tell me, two-seam fastball that I need control of, a curveball that I need control of, a slider that I need control of. Can I, if I'm a catcher, can I help my pitcher by having maybe some sort of foreign substance as I throw the ball back to him? Are they going to get to that point as they continue to try to cheat along the way?
Yeah, baseball lore is filled with stories of catchers helping out pitchers, you know, whether that's as they draw their hand back to throw it back to the pitcher, scraping the surface against their shin guard, or maybe putting some foreign substance on it. Look, we had Bill Miller on our Sunday night broadcast the other day, and he said that generally speaking, they're not looking to be aggressively checking position players. But he pointed out catchers in particular, yeah, they're going to be looking down. And look, they're right in front of them. And if they see pine tar or something else on their body, on their shin guard, on their chest protector, on their belt, then they will basically come down with a hammer on those guys if they think catchers are breaking that rule.
Mm. Buster, Javi Baez, we can go back to this. We laughed about Tom Brady not knowing how many downs. We laughed about J.R. Smith not knowing what the score was in an NBA Finals game. We laughed about which team was it that didn't – they ran the bases wrong. I mean, we've had a lot of things that we've seen. Was that Pirates? The Pirates always screwing up base running and everything else. But Javi Baez not knowing how many outs and not knowing situation for a player of his caliber, I mean, what you saw David Ross doing by benching him, you know, like where have we reached with Javi Baez and maybe their lack of losing patience with him in Chicago?
I'd say this, you know, just having known David Ross for a long time, having worked with him at ESPN, he's someone who is eminently fair. But as he said, the day that he took over a job and he became the manager to a lot of players that he was a teammate of at one point, if I have to do something, if I have to say something, if I think it's the right thing to do, I will do that. I think and I haven't talked to Rossi, but I think what probably bothered him more than Javi forgetting how many outs there were, which happens, I don't want to say on a regular basis, but that's not uncommon. I think it was the response once he realized that he messed up. He just kind of gave it a wave like, and he didn't try to go back. I suspect that probably is the reason why Rossi pulled him out and wanted to send a message.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
I know.
We laugh because there's a scoreboard that tells you.
Big-ass scoreboards, really large ones, too, with big numbers everywhere in stadiums.
But it is amazing. Hey, again, Tom Brady didn't know how many downs. So if Tom Brady can screw up.
Well, he was using the Tom method, though, trying to get one over.
You think that worked out well for him, though.
Yeah, it ended up working out well for him, yeah. Buster, we thank you, as always, for your time and perspective.
Go Dodgers, Buster.
All right,
go
Buster.
Dodgers.
See you guys. Right. Take care.
Keyshawn, J. Will Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance, protecting small businesses with specialized coverage for commercial vehicles. More at ProgressiveCommercial.com.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. I want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay.
People are watching and people are listening, and acceptance, it's going to be what enables other athletes to come out in the future.
It's a big story. It happened right after our show, like, you know, about an hour or so, right? After our show, not even, where this story came out yesterday. Choice words there is... Carl Nassib, who's a defensive end for the Raiders, took to Instagram to come out as gay, to make that announcement, to make it, you know, something that he felt like he needed to say. And what was, to me, again, the most interesting part of it was that he felt the need to do it, and that a lot of people's reactions were positive, as they should be, supportive. Now, one thing also to point out here that I think is also very important, not to glaze over at all, is him pledging $100,000 to what is the Trevor Project, and that provides crisis intervention and suicide prevention services to the LGBTQ plus community. And that's something that you can't just say in passing, because him feeling the need to come out and say, tell the world who he is a secret that a lot of people live with, and then the anxiety that comes with it and everything else. And so that's the example, is that him just providing that example. But guys, as we talk about this story, I think that's something that also needs to be discussed, is the fact that people are going to look and say, well, he's going to be a leader now. He's the first guy to play. He's going to represent the community and all that stuff.
No.
He said he's a private person who doesn't really do things for attention, but he felt he needed to do this. I think for him, it's let's watch a guy now just exhale and be himself and not have to worry about hiding something about his past because he's worried about how people will react. And I wonder, as we talked about, Key, how much this would be either welcomed in a locker room or maybe just like, okay, move on. Right? Like, it's not like something that it has to be. Does it have to be discussed in the locker room at all? Does it have to be something, you know, guys, that you need to have a chat? Does he need to walk in the locker room of a training camp and talk to everybody? Or does it Oh, there's Carl. Hey, man. And that's it.
His teammates, if I'm a betting man, hadn't been in locker rooms, his teammates probably knew what was up. It's none of their business. They don't get involved in a man's personal life like that, especially on the hate side. That's not a locker room. It doesn't go down like that. You know, it's support. It's we with you, you with us. It's whatever. I mean, big deal. Okay, so what? We playing football, man. That's your life, what you like. We love you. You one of us. Let's go. Let's go knock some heads off together. That's pretty much the way that I saw things in a locker room when I played. I mean, it's support. It really, truly is. You know, hats off to him, much like you said. You know, the weight off the shoulders. That's the one thing in all of this that I like, is that he doesn't have to carry or feel like
right.
certain things. You know, he doesn't have to feel like, oh my God, when everybody else is leaving the locker room, or
well, you go to the team Christmas party.
Yes, he doesn't have
and
to
families
feel like
are part
that.
Of it, and you feel weird because
no,
like,
you don't have to feel that way.
Just, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
No, you don't have
show
to feel
up as you, want.
You don't have to feel that way, and that's the beauty of it. And you know, you're gonna always have a few knuckleheads. That's just reality. That's life. That's what it is. You're gonna always have some immature dummy in a locker room who's 22, 23 years old that don't quite get that this is. And I always go 6-7 months ahead. This is 2022. We live it in now, man. This ain't 1950 something anymore. This is not what that is. So, you know, hats off to him. I'm excited to see him play again.
Yeah, I thought yesterday was a really big deal. And I thought Carl not only spoke for himself, but in his IG note, he really delivered a small little stat that I thought really spoke about the significance of him using his platform to talk about this. And it says, studies have shown that all it takes is one accepting adult to decrease the risk of an LGBTQ kid attempting suicide by 40%. Mm. Whether you're a friend, a parent, a coach, or a teammate, you can be that person. So is Carl going to be the leader of the free world as it relates to taking on this mantle? No, I don't think so. But I think the more people are open to having these conversations goes to exactly what his note amplified. Right? It's about helping other people as well be comfortable in their own skin and decreasing that risk of suicide for really a narrative that's been taboo in our country for a very, very long time. And as it relates, Key, to the locker room, I don't care what anybody says. I would pray that the ultimate support comes from teammates. But Key, as you and I know, there are knuckleheads in the world, and there are people that I'm sure will say things, because whenever you're a pioneer and you're blazing a path, it's never that easy. But you would hope that the majority of his teammates will come to his support and will not allow things like that to be tolerated anymore. Yeah. Because, you know, look, people say things sometimes, and a lot of friends don't correct their friends for how they speak. So now when you're around, you have to be way more aware. And that's not acceptable to begin with. But now you put more pressure on other people. You can't say stuff like that, man. That's not okay anymore. You're right, Key. We are in 2022. Unfortunately, a lot of people, their minds don't live in 2022. They live back in the day. And we find that more and more and more with the way we hear people talk in everyday society.
Well, in everyday society, there are going to be issues. There's no question about it. I am more concentrating on the sport, the peers, the people playing against, the people who he's playing for. Mm-hmm. That is where the support comes from. Outside people, I mean, yes, you're going to have your detractors. There's no question about it. I mean, you know, that's just – I saw it with my own daughter growing up. So I get it. I understand it. I see it with my niece growing up. I get it. I understand it. I've seen it within my own household and my own family members. So I get it. Doesn't make it right. But eventually, you've got to shake them to a core to get them to wake up, to realize and see. And as I said to you earlier on the show, Alan, is that – people inside that locker room that play for the Raiders, and I'm not in the Raider locker room, they're 100% on board with whatever decisions he makes. And I can almost guarantee you, as Stephen Hay would say, he can guarantee it. I can almost guarantee you, if somebody on an opponent's team says something derogatory to him, that teammate on that opponent's team is going to take issue with his teammate. I can almost guarantee you that, because the vast majority of those players all think the same.
And you said something that I found interesting, because him to make this video more than likely talk to his teammates first, do you think?
Not necessarily even talk to
or
his
some.
Teammates. His teammates, what kind when of, you around somebody every single day, man, we know what the deal is.
Yeah.
I've had teammates on my teams that lived a different path and decided to do different things, and I knew what they were doing. It's not my business whether it was drugs or their sexual orientation. Had nothing to do with you. Still my dude. If you want to bring along, let's go. Hey man, we're going to the steakhouse tonight. Y'all want to come? Cool. We ain't got no issues.
Right, what matters is how much can you help me win.
It's not even how much can you help me win, because that becomes super selfish. It's, do I like you and do I understand who you are?
But Key, you have such a level of maturity about you.
Oh, really?
In the way
thank you.
Shocking, I know.
Yeah.
But you do, in the way you see this. And I have that same thing. I have a lot of friends who are part of that community, and I love them. They're my family. But that's not everybody.
No, it's not, Jay. It's not everybody. But it's people like yourself and myself and the Derrick Brookses that I played with of the world to get the ones that – don't understand to understand. It's not that big of a damn deal.
I agree, man.
It's like it really is not. And so it's news because it's the first NFL player, active NFL player, that has come out and said, hey, this is me. This is who I am. The first. Yes, there's been retired guys. There's been guys that tried to make the team. All of those sort of things. And a lot of it sometimes, too, has to do with the economics of where they're at in their career and how stable mm-hmm. they are. Yep. And Carl has a nice contract with the Raiders. And so he feels, I'm sure, very secure, and this only helps him. And for this, watch he become a better player than he is now.
More, yeah, more at
ease. Watch.
Now, let me ask you this. He might be the first, but does he now, like, have other players that say, all right, he did it, now
eventually
I'm gonna
do it. You are, yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
But
you
don't think
you don't imagine it's just going to.
No, it's not going to be. If you talk about, like, a floodgate all of a sudden.
Well, I mean, like, I'm not trying to say that, but it does it kind of other players watch and see.
These sort of things. Are very fluid and delicate
mm-hmm.
because it's a process.
Okay,
everything is, as Carl said, it's been on his mind.
Right,
he's been wanting to push sin for a very long time. It's a process.
Yeah, and he
it
did.
Takes time to get to this point where you feel comfortable enough to say, you know what, I'm ready. It takes time.
And the reaction to it so far has been positive, as you would expect, as we are, as Key said, in 2022. Coming up, where Brooklyn at after a second round exit? We will discuss next. KJZ, ESPN Radio, and ESPN News. So we're into the conference finals. We were expecting.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
To have the Brooklyn Nets there. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets were the favorite. And we're talking about, as we discussed yesterday, basically a toe away from winning that game in Game 7 in dramatic fashion as KD hit a shot that his toe was on the three-point line at the end of regulation, turned into a two, and that forced overtime, and the Bucks end up winning in overtime, so they will play the Hawks instead of the Nets moving on. And it leads to questions, of course, about Brooklyn and where they go from here. We talked, we had Magic Johnson on the show yesterday, guys, and had him for a while, and we did talk about the Nets and what they do from here. They have their big three, and Key, you said they can't go anywhere. Those guys locked in, right? Finish the job in Brooklyn.
They can go somewhere if, in fact, the general manager and Steve Nash, president of the team, all say, maybe we can move one. Maybe this doesn't fit, blah, blah, blah. But them leaving and opting out and contracts and leaving, no, they don't need to do that anymore.
Right, right.
They've already bid to two or three spots on their own for the most part, right? And so you don't want to just keep chasing a ring with different crews. Stay in Brooklyn. If somebody wants to join you, great. If they decide to move a piece or two to get another piece, great. But to opt out to move, I wouldn't recommend that.
Right. So it's the pieces around them then that have to improve. And Jay, Magic had this to say about the Nets, their issues, and how they have to solve them.
The problem with Brooklyn is this. They're going to need some really good role players. The ones they have now is not going to help them win a championship. So they got to get guys who can really fill a role and bring something to the table. That's the one thing I think Brooklyn has to trade for or sign this offseason, get some role players that can a tough guy down low that can give them second shots.
I thought Tucker
shots.
Would be a great fit. So P.J. Tucker, I thought, would have been a great fit. He ended up going to the Bucks instead, and that was a huge part of that series, of course, him defending Kevin Durant. But, Jay, like, what do the Nets need to do?
Nothing. They need to do nothing. They need to get healthy. They don't need to make any trades. If there is a more aggressive big that you can find that gives you a little bit more versatility, then maybe. But there's really nothing they have to do. I mean, Blake Griffin played well. Joe Harris couldn't hit the side of a barn. I actually really like their role players. I don't bet money on Joe Harris being as abysmal from the three-point line next year and in the playoffs. I don't really – this team, when they're healthy, will by far be the favorite. By far. They were going to beat Milwaukee with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. So if you have James Harden and Kyrie, KD, you got guys like Nick Claxton, you got guys like Blake Griffin, you got guys like Jeff Green who can space the floor, knock down shots from the outside. You got Joe Harris. And maybe you find a good backup, guard. Maybe you can, upgrade a tad considering even though Mike James played well at times. And Bruce Brown, I really like as a piece player. What else do you need?
Well, remains to be seen. Clearly, health was what you said was what they need. Let's bring in Kerry Kittles, former Nets guard, who joins us right now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Kerry, I don't know if you heard what Magic said there, but you obviously heard Jay's take on it as well. If we talk about, before we even get into what we saw in this series, if you talk about going forward, what does Brooklyn need to do? What would you say they need?
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, I think Jay was right. I think they have all what it takes. He's absolutely right. Getting healthy is the number one thing for that team. We know that if they're healthy, how dominant they can be. They show that in just a few. It's just a small sample size that we've seen this season. And don't forget, if they're able to keep Spencer Dinwiddie, another guy who can play with the ball in his hands and doesn't necessarily need hard to make a play for him. And if you don't have Kyrie in the lineup, if you don't have KD in the lineup, you have another playmaker with the ball. He's another explosive guy who averaged 20 a year ago. So I think they have all what it takes to get it done. They just have to figure out a way of just keeping their bodies healthy throughout the regular season.
Kerry, do you think your backcourt between you and John Celestan, you guys would have gave us the business in college? You're the reason I wanted to go to Villanova. I'm just trying to let you know, Kerry. You're the reason I wanted to go to Villanova.
Well, I'm saying me and Alvin, we would have given you guys a run for your money. Alvin Williams, no doubt.
That's right. Hey, I want to ask you, Joe Harris really struggled shooting the ball in the series, and obviously he signed a four-year, $75 million contract. What goes through your mind when you go through something like that at that stage of the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a rough way to end it for, you know, another phenomenal year for Joe Harris, right? I mean, he's leading the league in three-point percentage again and, you know, shooting at a very high clip. And just to have that series where he shot so poorly, man, I feel bad for him. I think the offseason for him is going to be a time to reflect on his mental strength. I think for him as a shooter, he needs to figure out a way of making those key shots when you're under the gun. And the only way to do it is to go out next season and prove it, right? So, I mean, they can't trade him right now. He's under contract. I mean, they want to keep him because he actually really helps the superstars spread the floor when he's hot. So, you know, just kind of figure out how to mentally be strong enough to get through that and push through the times when you don't see the ball going in. Are there other things you can maybe add to your game to take pressure off your three-point shot?
Kerry, as you know, as you have success in any league and you win games and there's coaches on your staff that have opportunities, there's a couple coaches on the Nets staff that have an opportunity to maybe move on. How many coaching changes do you see the Nets will have, and who will be possibly gone off this coaching staff before the start of next season?
Yeah, you're right. I think D'Antoni is definitely going to have some options. I mean, there's so many, you know, jobs open right now. And that's what you really want from an organization standpoint. You talk about building a culture, right, of where you want to be. You know, you're going to see other teams purge their really good players. You're going to see teams purge their coaches. Right, we saw this for a long time going on with the Spurs. And the Nets will make the necessary adjustments. I think Sean Marks and Steve Nash really have a good take on what they really want to do. And if they lose a couple of coaches this offseason, they'll figure out how to find the right pieces to build what they already have. And Jay hit the nail on the head. They are building what all teams would desire to build, right? To have a franchise with three dominant players all in their prime who enjoy playing together. I mean, this is what you really want to see from an organization that's trying to build a championship culture. They have all what it takes. Losing a couple of coaches or maybe a player or two won't really hurt you when you have that core together.
That's the foundation, right? You start with that. If you have a foundation like that, it really just depends on how you build around it. But
and they're going to attract like more that. Players. They're going to attract – that's everyone's going to want to go to Brooklyn now and play or be a part of that franchise. And that's a great thing you want to have when you own their franchise and when you're a part of it.
It's going to be a very interesting offseason, no doubt about it. Kerry, thanks again for joining us on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
All right, Kerry Kittles, again, he would know. Played in New Jersey with the Nets, went to the finals. But that's going to be the most important thing to see going forward. The key is they have the foundation. How they build around that now or continue to, well, that will be remains to be seen. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, they have a foundation as well with two players, but one might be – it might be time for him to go. So what would be the best landing spot for Ben Simmons? What we come up with might surprise you. That'll be next.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Beginning, and we have Jay's Round Ball Rankings brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877 Ask Dell. Jay, take it away.
Okay. Number five.
This is if I were Ben Simmons. I am crazy. I do crazy things. I'm crazy competitive. This is if I were Ben Simmons. I'm not saying it's going to work out economically. There's fair trade value. I'm just saying here are my destinations. If I were Ben Simmons, where I would like to go. Number five, Portland. If that is with CJ going somewhere else, to be able to have him at the dunk spot at four, plus defensively, I could bring a different dynamic to Portland because they rank 29th defensively. If I had played at the four spot with Nurkic, with Covington, with Norman Powell, and with Dame Lillard, I like the way that team looks in the West. I like the way we're built. Now we have to figure out who our head coach is going to be. It's probably going to be Chauncey Billups. I feel like we're in a good situation in the West to build Dame and Ben Simmons on the same squad together. That's where I'll go number five. Let's go number four.
Okay. Number four,
the Brooklyn Nets. Why not? They need somebody with some tenacity defensively. Could they afford it? I'm not sure. Once again, I don't know how the numbers work out economically. I would just love to play next to Kevin Durant. I would love to play next to Kyrie Irving. I would love to play next to James Harden. I could just do my job, defend, and not have all these crazy expectations and just be a player that comes in, does the dirty work, and really can be a supercharged Draymond Green. It's that simple. Win multiple championships. People can hate on me, but you know what? I'm going to have the bag, and I'm going to have a lot of rings. That would be number three on my list. Next up.
Number three.
Sorry, I was number four. You got it. Number three.
Jeez, wake up.
Come on. You're fine, Keyshawn. Worry about yourself, Kay. Anyway, Denver. Oh, yeah. Why? Well, because I could play alongside Jamal Murray. I could play alongside Jokic, or as Evan Wilner, our producer, likes to call him, the Eggman. His ability to pass, the plays that they can make. Yeah, I know it's a horrible nickname, but I keep utilizing it anyway just to make it worse for Evan. But I like the way that Denver is built. Look, you mark this down. Denver will be close to the Western Conference Finals next year. They will probably be in the Western Conference Finals if they can stay healthy. Will Barton, you think about the pieces that they have. Aaron Gordon could just be Aaron Gordon. And Michael Porter Jr., if they can remain healthy, that lineup, if Ben Simmons were to want to be there, I would really love to see that way plays out. Next up.
Number two.
The Clippers. Yes. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Ben Simmons on the same team with the head coaching experience of Ty Lue. Talk about wing defenders. Talk about grit. Talk about a team that's not afraid of being in your face and challenging every step of the way. Are there other pieces that you could surround those core with? Yes, but Ben Simmons and Kawhi Leonard, the claw together with Paul George. You're seeing Paul George without Kawhi right now. Paul George can be the number one option. If Paul George plays that way with Kawhi, and then you have Ben Simmons as a facilitator for a team that needs a point guard, that's going to be problems for a lot of people. Next up, and the most important one.
Number one.
I'm crazy, y'all. I told you. Philadelphia.
What?
I don't care what anybody says. You know why? Because I'm not going to let it end like that in Philly. I'm not going to let Joel Embiid throw me under the bus. I'm not going to let my coach question whether I can be the point guard of a leading franchise. A lot of people have questioned my ability to lead this team, but I told y'all, I'm crazy. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to lead us to a championship. Philly fans probably not like it, but they will love it when I win them a world championship because I have something to prove, and I want people to know that, yeah, I didn't show up in the Eastern Conference semifinals. I didn't shoot the ball when I needed to shoot the ball. I wasn't aggressive. I didn't lead our team. Defensively, Trae Young did get the best of me. But you know what? I'm going to come back. I'm going to prove everybody wrong. I'm going to look everybody in the face and be like, I am that dude. And my play is going to show you that I am that dude. I'm crazy, but if I'm Ben Simmons, I'm not leaving Philly. I'm owning Philly. And I do that by my play in the offseason. Call me crazy, Allen. I don't care. I'm owning Philadelphia.
It's not crazy for him to want to do that and prove himself there. There's no doubt about that. But it might be crazy for him to believe that they'd want to stick with him. KJZ presented by Progressive Insurance. One team, though, Jay, I noticed you were missing, would be the Lakers. You know, Clippers, you mentioned,
yeah,
L.A.
We'll take you.
You know, Key has talked about the Lakers. Or maybe, as I need to get to
everybody
this.
To the Lakers.
Yeah, it's true. Or maybe, you
Jay,
know what?
Can we you still play? Call, we'll take you.
We need to call them. Maybe we need to call them the Clakers.
Huh?
Did you see this quote? Yeah, I saw a hat. I saw a hat someone make on social media. There's a hat that they're selling in L.A. It's a half Clipper logo, half Laker logo. Don't make any sense to me at all, right? But that's what they're saying. And Ty Lue said this. Now, remember, Ty Lue, originally drafted by Denver, but they trade on draft night, Nick Van Exel trade. Ty Lue was part of that deal. All right, so he was an original Laker, coaching now the Clippers. And he said this. Team has been starving for success. Fan base doing the same. I know the Lakers are out there, and there's a lot of Lakers fans here, but once the Lakers are gone, if we're not playing the Lakers, you should be cheering for the Clippers. It's all one city. Key?
Yeah, Ty.
Are you a Clakers fan?
Ty Lue bumped his head ever since he fell on the ground when Iverson stepped over him, if he think that. I mean, he still got that same – something's going on up there.
I've never – that's the one thing about cities that have two teams.
I know nobody root for no damn Clippers. That's no Laker fan.
No Laker fan would ever just say, well, at least it's L.A. You said that to me about New York and the Nets. Well, it's New York.
I didn't say root for them. I just said at least it's New York. At least it's L.A. I'm not rooting for them.
I root for North Carolina. Duke gets dropped out of the tournament. I want to see North Carolina win a chip.
Jay, you what?
Yeah. I root for ACC teams. No, I root for my team in my backyard if we get dropped out early.
I root for everybody.
That gives us more of
an
advantage. Our conference produced a champion.
I don't understand.
I root for everybody in the Pac-12 except UCLA.
So you're not going to say UCLA. The city of L.A. doesn't just become champions with the Dodgers and the Clippers winning?
Dodgers, Dodgers, Lakers, Raiders.
Stop, man.
Cowboys,
I
USC.
I never understood that.
Everything else, they can keep the Angels, they can keep all that. The Chargers, they keep all that.
Against Tom Brady and the Patriots because the hell with that.
The
next Kobe, you could book it. That's next.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.